Okay, maybe some of you have heard of Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld was the rabbi of the Young Israel of Qumran Hills for over 60 years, I believe. He died just about a year and a half ago, something like that, during COVID. And he had quite an illustrious career. He had a special relationship with the Rav Soloveitchik. Rav Schachter actually quotes him a number of times in his Sfarim, different things that he heard from the Rav. You can imagine what a powerful impact he had and what a special personality was if he could last in the same shul for over 60 years. My wife's grandmother, who, by her heart, is over 100 years old now, was a member of the shul. And 20 years after she left Queens, where he was the rabbi, she still stayed in touch with him because he left such an important impression on all the people in his congregation, all the people in the shul, and those relationships persisted for many years afterwards, even after people had left the community. So Rabbi Schoenfeld told the following story. He said one night he gets a call, 3 o'clock in the morning. So he's a dedicated rabbi, picks up the phone, eager to find out, what he can do, how he can help. And, he says, who is it? So he says, Rabbi, it's Irene Goldstein. Okay, Mrs. Goldstein, is everything okay? What's the matter? Actually, Rabbi, not everything's okay. My husband's mother just passed away in Eretz Yisrael. Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. Baruch Dan Amos, that's so unfortunate. What can I do to help you? Can I assist with some of the arrangements? Getting ready for the Levaya, for the Shiva. And she said, no. Most of the arrangements are taken care of already. There's family in Eretz Yisrael, and they're working with the Chabad Kedisha and the flights and the burial. So he said, okay, so what's the problem? What can I help you with? He said, Rabbi, I need your advice. I'm just not sure what to do, and things are very tense. My husband has to go to Eretz Yisrael for the Levaya. And he could just stay and sit Shiva there with the family in Eretz Yisrael. Or he can turn right around after the Levaya and come back here and sit Shiva in the community. Or maybe he'll stay there for a couple of days and sit Shiva. Or and then he'll come back afterwards. I'm so confused. I don't know what to do. There's so many different choices. I'm not sure what's right. So he said, okay, I'll help you work this through. Let's start slow. What does your husband think? What does your husband think you should do? My husband? My husband? Rabbi, my husband's fast asleep. He doesn't know about any of this. Don't you know it's 3 o'clock in the morning? Okay, so it's ridiculous, obviously. Okay, didn't even wake up her husband to tell her husband that his mother died, right? So I always think about the story when we get to these parshas of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because, if you were on the phone, if you were Rabbi Schoenfeld talking to this lady, so what would you say to her? You'd say, Mrs. Goldstein, just slow down. Think for a moment. What's going on over here? What's in front of you? What's on the table? Your mind is racing. You're so... You're in high speed, 10 steps ahead. Just first things first, prioritize, know what you're dealing with, and you won't skip any steps. And Chazal tell us that this was a critical aspect of the Shibud, this chisaron, this aspect of human nature that sometimes overcomes us, moving too quickly. We say every Shabbos and in Shacharis, we say Yismach Moshe. Yismach Moshe b'matnas chalkos. We know it has something to do with Matan Torah, that Moshe Rabbeinu was celebrating something about receiving the luchos. But that's about all the details that we have. It has something to do with Shabbos. But the Rishonim tell us that Yismach Moshe reflects the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu actually came up with Shabbos on his own before HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu was growing up in the king's palace before he had to run away to Midian. So he was an advisor. He was a nobility. He was a prince. And he was able to have the ear of Paro. And he noticed something which was not a secret, Chazal tell us, there are different versions of this in the Gemara, in Midrashim, that everything that the Jewish people would build on Shabbos, they were working 7 days a week, everything that they would build on Shabbos would immediately collapse. There's actually another version that says that everything they built the entire week, when Shabbos would come, it would then collapse. The names of the cities that they built, Pisom and Ramses, actually... were a hint to the fact, the lashon of those names, hint to the fact that whatever they would do would immediately fall down. Whatever they would build would immediately fall down. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, how could it be? You have to give everyone a break. If you work them 7 days straight, they're not going to be able to accomplish as much. In economics, there's a term known as the law of diminishing returns. At some point, if you work and work and work, you're so tired you can't even get as much done. And you may actually accomplish more by having a day off than working for 7 days. You'll get more done in 6 days if you rest on the seventh than you're working all seven. So he came to Paro and he said, something's not working. If you're working the slave 7 days a week, it's going to fail. And you're better off if you give them a little time to relax and catch a breath and recharge. So Paro said, okay, makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, and you put your plan into action, give him a day off, and he chose Shabbos. So later, when he came to Har Sinai, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the mitzvah of Shabbos, and the Aseres HaDibros, and the Luchos, Yismach Moshe was very happy, because Baruch Shagivanti, he was machabin to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own plan, that Shabbos was a day for Klal Yisrael to rest. Just Derech Agav, interestingly, this medrash about Moshe Rabbeinu going, Vayar b'sivul sam. Rabbi Willig was a medayik. Vayar b'sivul sam. He saw not esivul sam. It's not that he viewed their travails and their hardships. He actually got in to what they were experiencing. We know he wanted to go out and feel what it was like and know how hard it was. Because only when you really can be nosy but old and appreciate what someone else is going through can you complain and can you really try to work against it. So he went and he experienced it and complained to Paro. So this episode. Rav Moshe Feinstein, thousands of years later, actually took a page from his namesake, from Moshe Rabbeinu, and used the same plan. When he was a rabbi in the city of Luban, in Russia, before World War II, he came to America in the 1930s, Rav Moshe Feinstein, when the communists were sweeping Russia and revolutionizing the way things were done under their regime, so they came to his town, and they demolished the mikveh. And they say, the mikveh, that's, from the old regime, that's traditional, it's religious, we don't have any of that stuff. And not only that, but it's a health hazard, right? You have people, you can imagine what, if you go to a mikveh now in Borough Park, you can imagine what a mikveh would look like back in Europe. So, we need hygiene and we need cleanliness. We don't want a pandemic. We don't want germs. We want to keep things clean. So we have to knock down this mikveh. And they were going to build a mixed swimming facility, which obviously it was a bathhouse, but it was also meant to undermine all the Judaism. So what did Rav Moshe Feinstein do? He came to the authorities and he said, your philosophy and your lifestyle, maybe it works for you, but I just got to warn you that the Jews are very traditional and they don't go mixed swimming. So I'm telling you right now, if you get rid of the mikveh and you make it only possible for them to come for mixed swimming, they won't come at all. And they'll go weeks and weeks and they won't bathe and they'll be dirtier than they were before and they'll be counterproductive. You'll be shooting yourself in the foot. If you make one day a week, separate swimming hours for men, separate for women, then they'll come and bathe. Otherwise, your whole plan is going to self-destruct. And they heard what he was saying, just like Moshe Rabbeinu said to Paro, and they were makabel, and they retracted, and they said, once a week there'll be separate swimming hours. I think Moshe Feinstein, legend has it, was able to be machshir the pool, bid the Eved b'shas adchak to count as a mikveh, to allow the people to continue using it. Okay, going back to our Moshe Rabbeinu. So what was Paro thinking, right? Paro was a smart man, and he could have figured this out also. That if you work the slaves too hard, they're not going to survive, they're not even going to produce as much. But the answer was that Paro was not so much concerned with all the pyramids or whatever that he was building, the Arei Miskanos. What he wanted to do was really to wage psychological warfare against the Jews. He wanted to break them. He wanted to take away all of their self-confidence and their morale and their motivation. So he was very happy with them just totally being worn out. He was very happy if they were building things that fell down at the end of the week or fell down the very same day, because if anything, that just rubbed their noses further and further into the ground. It just made it even more difficult for them to wake up in the morning and to accomplish. And at some point, they were working so hard and so fast and being pushed and pushed and pushed that it was a good thing in his mind that they didn't have a chance to breathe, because they couldn't think. Their lives were just rushing by them and passing by without them even being able to reflect on what was going on, because that's how you continue subjugating a people, right? At some point, if things are bad, they're going to rebel, they're going to make a revolution. But they're not going to do that if they don't even have a chance to think, if they can't reflect on their lives with a moment of introspection and say, this is not where we want our lives to be going, or our life isn't even going anywhere, and that's not where we want to be. If that never even happens, so then there's no chance of them ever trying to fight back or to try to change the matzav. Reb Chaim Shalevitz says that's exactly what happened in Russia under the communists. Reb Chaim Shalevitz writes, he said that in Russia, the malchus, the government, put the responsibility for making parnaso on the necks of the Bnei Abedina. They were starving for food and they were so entrenched in that matra daitos ha'olam, their mind was so preoccupied with just being able to live, that they never had a chance to even consider making any sort of revolution. The truth is, not sure in some ways that it's so different than the Ola Parnassa that people experience in America nowadays, the way they have to work so hard, and it's a rat race, and it's like the hamster wheel, just going, 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 going. But that's the way Paro waged his psychological warfare, that they never even had a chance to think. And with that understanding, there's a beautiful pshat of the Netziv that comes together in a way that really Mamash brings it to life. The pasuk says, "Vayhi bayomim harabim ha'ela vayomas melech Mitzrayim." And it was after these many, many days, the king of Mitzrayim died. "Vayanchu Yisrael na'avoda vayizaku." The people, they let out a big sigh, a big, anguish that they felt, and they cried out, "Vatasha v'asam elokim min avoda." And they cried to Hashem, the sound of their tefillos reached their Ribbono Shel Olam. So Frek the Netziv, that was the first time that they davened? That was the first time that they, where were they? Only after all this time, Vayizaku, he says, yes! You know why? Because Vayomas Melech Mitzrayim, the king died, okay? So when the Paro died, so they put the flags at half-mast, and it's a national day of mourning, all the stores are closed, all the government officials, they have to go attend to the Leviah, and it was a national day of mourning, and it was their first day off in 210 years. First day they had off, they finally got to sit back and think once for the first time. And when they did, then they could be in touch, they were in touch with their suffering and with their feelings for the first time in 210 years. And that caused them to call out to Hashem. That caused them for the first time to realize, wait a minute, something about this situation is not right. Something about this situation needs to be corrected, needs to be fixed. And that's what that initiated their response. But ultimately, up until this point, Paro was so successful in squashing and squelching any opportunity they had to consider the matzav that they could not even think. Think about their lives, think about their ruchness, think about Hashem, think about what the future of Klal Yisrael was going to be. This also we saw in the Mesil Sisharim a few weeks ago. The Mesil Sisharim compares Paro to the Yetzer Hara himself. And he says the methodology of Paro is the methodology of the Yetzer Hara. He wants you to be moving so quickly and thinking so little that you don't have a chance to consider. Harezu me'ein atzas Paro harasha. He says, just make it harder and harder on them. He didn't want them to have any space to give any attention. To come up with a plan to oppose him. To distract their hearts from any contemplation. With the power of the non-stop, consistent, persistent, unending work. That's exactly what the Yetzer does. Mamish. That's how he enslaves people. Ki ish mochamahu. The Yetzer Hara is an ish mochamah, right? We say in Oz Yosher, Hashem is an ish mochamah, right? So you think just Hashem's going to fight my battles for me. The Yetzer Hara is also an ish mochamah. And he's all kinds of tricks. And you can't get away from him without chachma rabba vashkafa gedola. And, if you ever see one of these Civil War or World War II reenactments, you have a lineup of people on two sides, and on each side they're all holding their swords like this, and if some guy blows a bugle, charge, and just the two sides just converge on each other, and they're just holding their swords out just like that. And if you're a horse, right, so all you know is, right, they usually blindfold them, and you're just waiting for that kick. You have no idea what's in front of you. You have no idea what you're running into. There's an oncoming sharp edge that's about to slice you in half. But you're just running and running and running and running because there's this kick. There's this kick. I got to keep pushing and moving without even thinking. That's the way the Yetzer Hara axis makes us at, right? Kisus keperet ein haven. Without even thinking. That's a pasuk. That's a pasuk. And that's what he was very successful in doing. And you want to hear something really cool? Over time, after this Mesil Sisharim, I noticed there's a few Rashis and a few Unklises in Chumash that hint to that Atas HaYetzer the Mesil Sisharim is describing. In Parshas Korach, Aaron HaKohen is sent out to the front lines where there's Magefa, and he's told, go bring the Ketores. Sim Ketores, V'holek Meher Ala Eda, go to the people, bring the Ketores, stop the Magefa, right, as fast as you can. Why as fast as you can? Meheras, so that people don't die. Zakti Unklis on that Pasuk, bring it quickly, Holech mehera ovil bifria. He translates the word maher as bifria. Pei resh ayin osil suparo. The word paro, on one level, the shoresh, reflects that speed of just go, go, go. In Chet Ha'egel, Hashem says to Moshe, go down, raid, lech raid kishichas amcha, go down to your people, they're off the path. Soru maher min aderech. They quickly strayed from where they're supposed to be. Maher in unklis, satu bifriya. Once again, the shoresh peiresh ayin, the shoresh of paro. The shoresh of paro. Same thing over here in earlier later pasuk. Also over there, kifaruah, who were describing Klal Yisrael as being quick. Why was Yisrael too quick? Why was Klal Yisrael too quick? They couldn't wait for Moshe Rabbeinu. A few hours, they couldn't double check the math to see when he was coming down. Ended up with the greatest aveir in all of history with the Chet Ha'egel because they were moving too quickly. They needed to do something. They needed to say something. They needed to act. They couldn't just take it easy and reflect and think and ask a shayla, make sure they're doing the right thing. That is the atzas hayetzer. That is the danger, and all that added up to what the Ramban says in this week's parsha, mikotze ruach miavoda kasha. They couldn't listen to Moshe Rabbeinu, right? Lo shamuel Moshe mikotze ruach miavoda kasha. Their spirit was short, and the work was too hard. Dr. Ramban, dochak shayu anogsim atzamahem. They were nogsim. What's nogsim? The taskmasters, who kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and didn't allow them to listen or even think about what was going on. And that's where we end up with the nogsim. The pushing and pushing. You know, in 1968, I think, the Apollo mission in space, there was an astronaut by the name of Rusty Schweikert. Rusty Schweikert was out on what they call the umbilical cord. You know what an umbilical cord is? Umbilical cord is the cord that connects the mother's womb to the baby. Right? So the astronauts, they put them out there, they're floating, and they had this cable that connects them with oxygen and, you know, with communication to the ship. So he's out there on the umbilical cord floating, and there was some major malfunction. So his partner had to go back into the capsule, and everyone down on Earth in Houston had to focus on fixing the problem, fixing the malfunction. So, but they said, just wait here. So he's just waiting, floating in space. Now, you have to keep in mind, what does it mean to float in space? A spaceship orbits Earth. You know how fast it orbits Earth? The sun rises on the moon every hour and a half. A spaceship going around the Earth, 17,000 miles per hour, okay? 17,000 miles per hour, okay? Imagine, that's how fast he's revolving around the globe. Okay, so talk about moving fast, right? So he's just like seeing the green and the blue and the white and the clouds and the rivers and the Pacific Ocean, just 17,000 miles. They asked him later, you know, what were you thinking? And he said, all I could think about was questions. Like, what does this all mean? What am I? What am I doing here? And when I heard that story, I said to myself, like, oh, this guy's a Ben Torah. You know, this guy's moving 17,000 miles an hour, and he finally has a chance to think, and he's asking good questions. Where am I going? What's my life about? What's my place in this cosmic, in the universe? What am I doing here? And that's exactly what Paro tried to squelch. To stop, to make it impossible, because the Yitzhahara tries to stop us with these nogsim. The push. We have a lot of nogsim, Rabosai. We have a lot of things that keep us moving so quickly we can't even think. One of them is what we mentioned before, B'chaim Shemalev, it's a push of parnasa. The push of parnasa, right? The push of parnasa already starts in college when we've got to get our grades. We're moving from, you know, just the rat race. I got to compete with this. I got to get the internship. I got this interview. One thing after another, and I'm so focused on that. My life is going to be a disaster if I'm not first in my class in the best law firm, in the best medical school. You know, and like, no, you got to slow down. Think like, what's my future going to be if I can't even breathe? If I can't even learn? If I can't even dive? And I can't sleep? And especially the way our the Gevir culture. That's emerging. The way that people are so trained to, I need to make $500,000, $1 million, $2 million a year to support my Orthodox lifestyle, right? It's obviously incorrect, okay? But that's people build up that imagination. We also have nogsim that come externally, not from our imagination, but our finals, right? Okay, finals keep pushing us, right? Going from this project to this test, studying for this. I can go the whole day, like 11 o'clock at night, and I look back, I'm like, what did I learn today, right? Like, oh, I'm going to roll into Maariv after a long day of studying in the library. You know, like, is that going to be the best Maariv? Because I was working outside, I didn't have a chance to breathe today. And then when 2 weeks of finals are up and we have 2 weeks off totally unstructured, we wonder why our ruchnis is not where we want it to be. Because the last 2 weeks were a disaster because we were just running. You got to plan now to build in a schedule where you, obviously it's got to be balanced because you do have a lot of studying to do, but there's got to be stuff built into my day that where I'm thinking, where I'm working, where I'm learning, okay? And this is what Musar is all about every single day. It's about making sure that there's time for Cheshbon Nefesh. We spoke about that Ravid, right? Why is it that naturally I need to eat three times a day? The Ravid says, because then you have three times a day to do a Cheshbon Nefesh. Breakfast, think about how my morning went, my wake up, my brachos, my tzilos. Lunch, I think about how my morning seder went, and so on and so forth. Every unit of time I have to think. But if I'm not building time into think, then my life will not end up where it's going to, where I want it to be. I'm going to be like the Shibud Mitzrayim. The Swarm tells us that the parshas that we read are indicative of the challenges that we're going on in our lives right now. And the Shibud Mitzrayim is a Shibud of this tekufa in yeshiva as well. But even when it's good times, we have Nogsim, we have holy Nogsim, right? It says in Maariv, we say Hashkivenu. And actually, we would say, Hasir Satan Milfaneinu Machreinu. 5 minutes, guys. Hasir Satan Milfaneinu Machreinu. Take away the Satan from in front of us and behind us. So I understand you want to take away the Satan from in front of me. You're trying to get me to do the wrong thing, right? Why do you need to take away the Satan in back of me? He's gone. I left him in the dust. The answer is no, because he's still there pushing me forward, sometimes pushing me to go so quickly and not think about what I'm doing, do more than I'm able to handle, so that I'll ultimately collapse. And I can't live up to those expectations. I've got to be balanced in what I expect of myself as well. But I need to give time to consider if what I'm doing is balanced, if it's healthy, if it's too much, if it's too little, and am I moving in the right direction? And all of this begins actually in the last parsha. At the end of Vayigash, going to Vayichi, everybody knows there's no hefsek. It's sussum. It's closed. There's no nine-letter break between the parshas of Vayigash and Vayichi like every other parsha. Chazal tells because nistum einam, the shibud was beginning and the eyes of Klal Yisrael were closed. Now it makes so much sense. Rashi in Vayikra tells us why there's so many breaks. Hashem speaks to Moshe, there's a break. Hashem speaks to Moshe, teaches him about another halacha, there's a break. Why all those breaks? Rashi says, litein revach bein parsha leparsha, to put a little space, a little time for Moshe Rabbeinu to reflect, to think, to process what he just heard from Hashem. That's why there's breaks in the Torah, to remind us to stop and think. The one time when there's no break between a parsha and another parsha is the parsha where we entered the Shibud of Mitzrayim. Because that's what embodied the Shibud. Where we lost sight of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we lost sight of who we were, because we did not have time to stop and think. Anytime we're moving too quickly. Pochaz Alai Yitzri, the Gemara says in the Nedarim, someone almost failed to remain a Jew. Their Yetzer Hara jumped on them. Pochaz Alashon of speed, of the brachos of Yaakov to Reuven, that Pochaz Kamayim Altosar, you acted too quickly. That's what happened. You act too quickly and make a mistake. You have to give revach bin parsha. Reflect on the last semester. Think, where was I holding the semester before you start the new semester? Litin revach bin parsha. Think about the last one. Give a little space. What can I correct? What can I improve? Two very simple practical suggestions. Two practical suggestions. One, to do today, right now as you leave the room, to build in moments of thought. Number one is a mezuzah. It's very nice if you kiss the mezuzah. Very nice if you touch the mezuzah. The Rambam says that's not what you do when you pass the mezuzah. When you pass the mezuzah, you should look at his words. The end of Parag Zion of Hilchos Mezuzah, he says, you stop and you think, remember there's a Ribono Shel Olam. You'll wake up from all the ridiculous things that occupy your mind. That's what he says. It's 2 seconds of thought. 2 seconds of thought. You might ask yourself, what do 2 seconds of thought do? The answer is you build neural pathways in your mind that train you to be a more reflective person. If signal, signpost, the mezuzah, remind me, think about it. There's a God. There's a HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There's some things that really matter in life, some things that don't. That will train you to be a thinking person. And without even trying, ultimately, you'll find yourself stopping reflecting as a habit. Number two, this is going to sound like a big chiddush, but this is very cool. Okay? It's so postural. Ask yourself, why don't I always do this? You leave this building, okay? Walking up Amsterdam Avenue. You're going to Gluck, to a class, or whatever. You have a choice. You can continue walking down Amsterdam Avenue and make a right on 185th. Or you make a 186th. Make a right on 186th and come around the back way. First of all, I'm not sure it takes you any longer. Okay, I'm not sure if you go this way or that way, there's really any difference. You can clock it, but it's a difference of maybe 10 seconds. First of all, you'll probably, there's a good chance you may not see things you don't want to see. I'm not talking about the five Torah, but there's other things you may not see that you don't want to see if you go that quiet route. If you go around 186, there's no one there. It's peaceful, it's usually silent, and you'll have 2 minutes to just think. Think to yourself, okay, how was my, I came out of Shir. Was I engaged? Was I focused? How was my morning? What am I going to be doing later today? Do I have 15 minutes in the middle of the day between classes where I can maybe open up a sefer, learn a halacha, listen to a quick shir, get a little boost of chizuk, call my parents and do the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. Call my parents, do the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. They haven't heard from me all week. 2 minutes to just think, to just be a little antisocial, go around the block the other way, and save myself those 2 minutes that I don't even need to build into my schedule because they're already there. And like I said, you'll find more and more opportunities. You'll build in your routine opportunities to think. You'll beat Paro. And in the end, it'll be Yismach Moshe. You'll feel geshmak. You'll feel so happy and so privileged to be able to accomplish so much more and not let the rat race of life, of the Atas HaYitzer, overpower you and not let you consider where you're holding, where you're moving. Shabbi Zohar Bosai, to get through finals with that attitude, to get through the next Tekufa with that attitude, and enter our next monument with that attitude as well. See you tomorrow, Mitzvah Hashem. Rabbosai, again, the plan for tomorrow is, please be here.